You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
Damn lucky that I found people who looked at music as a tool, as more of a way for us to understand ourselves better, understand our battles, use music as a form of therapy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Guidepost. Today, we're going back to Blaine and Blaine Chocolate's Game Changers in our community. Excited to have Blaine back. He's been traveling and fishing and filming real cool stuff that I'm not going to talk about, so it's a surprise, but you know, I think everyone will see it real soon. How have you been doing, buddy?
I've been good, man. Just trying to navigate through this.
Hey, your daughter graduated too, man. College. Like, look at you.
Yep. She graduates on May 9th. She got those pictures I showed you. One of the top in her class, getting her master's.
Number three in her class.
Yep, getting her master's.
Boy, that apple fell off that tree and rolled really far away, didn't it, man? God bless.
The only thing I could say is she looks like me. That's about it. So,
well, hey, dude, like my kid, like he talks to me and I got to have a thesaurus and Google Translate and he's 14. Yeah. I'm just like, I'm looking at my wife and I'm like, you know, I remember that. What was that movie with, Smokey and the Bandit, when he looked at his son, he's like, I'm gonna slap your mama in the mouth. No way, you came from my loins. Like the opposite though, like I'm an idiot, right? And my kid's like a genius. So I'm like, I kind of like, he starts talking, I look at my wife, like kind of squint at her to see if she flinches or anything, because
you know, I watched that movie last night, actually. Pretty funny.
I'm not surprised, man. That's a great movie. That's a great flick. So, Blaine, listen, I'm going to turn it over to you. I'm going to be here for technical support. And you know, when I hear something funny, I'll take myself off mute, pop in, and have some self-deprecating humor. But I want you to introduce your guest. I know you've been friends with him for a long time. We're excited to have him on. And Blaine, take it away.
All right. I appreciate it, man. So, tonight, I have a special guest here that I've been trying to pin down for a little while. We've kind of been going back and forth. This guy's an amazing person. Someone I like to call a good friend. We got to meet a few years ago, and this guy travels all over the world. He's a great fly angler, fishing guide, but he's also an unbelievable singer, songwriter, a musician. You know, you probably heard of him. This is going to be a kind of just shooting from the hip type of thing. I never have anything scripted on these talks, so I just kind of want to see where it goes. But I want to introduce my good friend, Chuck Reagan. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, brother, man. It's so good to chat with you, man. I really appreciate you having me on. I'm honored. Oh,
absolutely, man. It's always a pleasure when I get to spend time with you. We've got to share the boat a few times together, and you know, you've come out here fishing with me a couple times now. Got a muskie, and I just want to really get out there and see your world. And I do want to talk about that a little bit, and you know, because I think it's amazing that you're able to kind of do two things I know you're very passionate about. I think it's pretty amazing that you could take two things that you love and make a career out of both of them. I mean, not many people can say that they can do that, right? I mean, I'm sure.
I mean, I've heard people say, don't ever make your passion your work. But I've never really agreed with that. You know, I mean, to me, if you're going to put everything into something, and I know, cause you're the same way. I mean, the amount of time and energy and money we put in to chase species that we love, you know, and I can say the same thing about songwriting and touring and doing what we do in music. We've done that for over 30 years, you know, but, you know, if you're going to put that much of your salt into what you're doing, we damn sure better love it. otherwise we're going to, it's going to get old quick, or we're going to get old quick. You know?
No doubt. It's also, I mean, it's, we've talked about this a lot. I mean, we're both, love our families, and, family comes first and all. And I know you travel a lot, you know, with your touring, and of course you're going to do a little fishing on the side there, but you know, I like to talk about this a lot with buddies. And we've talked about this a lot when we're together on the boats, how you are able to juggle all these different things. And I think more importantly, it really kind of stems. I know it is for me. It's my wife kind of holds the fort together while I'm gone, and she's kind of telling me what to do. And I need that in my life, to be honest. And
yeah,
some of our stories that you've shared. I mean, I'll always love hearing some of the stuff, and you know, how you met your wife, and how she just kind of keeps everything going for you while you're on the road.
No doubt. I know they're the ones that need to be on the podcast, not us. I think.
Right. Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
The unsung heroes, right? I mean, that's right. The truth, man.
It is. I mean, you know, bless her heart. Like, she's full time momming it, you know, nowadays. You know, I mean, I'm grinding pretty hard. Like, usually when, you know, right now, this is going to be a big year for Hot Water Music, because it's our 30-year anniversary as a band. And we got a new record coming out on May 10th. We've had this whole campaign, all these shows planned and everything that are stretching all the way into 2025 right now. And it's all laid out and booked and everything. You know, and it's not super grueling. It's spread out enough, but at home, just to keep my finger on the pulse and to make ends meet, and just to keep what I've invested in and my guide business, and for the sheer love of it, I usually come home from those tours. You know, I carve out a few days off just to make sure everything's up and running and going, and between all the boats and the truck and everything, and hang with the family. And then I'm usually right back in the boat. And you know, but I made a conscious effort a while ago, to stop. I don't book as many weekends anymore. I feel really lucky that, you know, I've built a name enough, you know, for myself in this area where, you know, if I don't physically black out the dates on the platform that we use for booking, you know, dates, it'll just all book, you know. And I feel really, really lucky there. I've got an awesome, you know, group of folks that come and fish with me from all over the country and locally here as well. But it hit me, you know, that if I'm not careful, I'll just be spending way too much time away from my boy when he's at a very impressionable age where he needs his daddy. And so I made a conscious effort to, like, all right, I'm guiding, you know, when I'm guiding Monday through Friday and Saturday and Sundays for the family. He turns 9 in May. And that was a huge deal when I made that step. And granted, when he's on summer break, then that goes out, then I can, it don't matter, you know, and we'll customize the schedule, you know, based around what we want to do as a family. But everything I'm doing right now, which is wild to think about and say this, I planned last year. You know, and that's the only way my schedule can work. And that's basically the first thing I do is when I open the calendar a year ahead of time, is I black out everything that has anything to do with family and birthdays and holidays that we want off. And I black that out. And, you know, next thing I look at are, you know, when, you know, what's happening as far as in the music agenda that's either already on the books or in the plan. And then after that, you know, I look at where, when, and where I exactly want to guide. And, you know, all those windows are laid out a year prior, you know, so it took some years to kind of figure that out, you know, but
I totally know that feeling. I travel anywhere near as much as you do. I mean, you're trying to juggle the guiding and the music side of it. And that's got to be a little bit of a struggle, I would say, because you're probably feeling pulled in a lot of different directions, right? From, you know, right. So I get it.
Yeah. And it's, you know, sometimes it's hard to, you know, we have a lot of cool opportunities that come down the pipe in both music and fishing. And you know, sometimes it's tough to say no to some stuff, but you know, it's also important to constantly realize that, we have the power to say no, you know,
yeah, right. Yeah.
Being independent workers as we are, you know, it's always a fine line though, man. I mean, you know, like being an independent worker, it doesn't matter what you do, whether you're a fishing guide, a musician, you know, a contractor, you know, in the trades of any sorts. Like if you're independent, there ain't a whole carve. We have to carve. Sorry, I was getting a call. I'll repeat that. But what I was saying is, you know,
yeah, that's fine. Don't worry about it.
As independent workers, you know, there's not a whole lot of security unless we go get it. Like we got to go get it. We got to make it. And, you know, that's always a challenge because, you know, as daddies and as, husbands and trying to hold together a crew at home and make responsible decisions, we're always walking that fine line of like, well, I'm here to work hard and I'm here to provide and I'm here to keep my family safe, keep my home from falling apart, you know? And, you know, sometimes it's really seem, at least for me, sometimes it gets really cloudy. You know, as to how much time I should be putting into my work opposed to how much time I should be putting into my family. You know, I would love to be able to put all the time into my family, but you know, this is what we do. And, this is how we got to do it. And, you know, being an independent guide, independent musician, you know, the schedules are maddening, you know, it can be. You know, like if I'm prepared, if I stick to the schedule, everything rolls smooth. And, you know, it's still tough work, but, for the most part, like the toughness comes into all the preparation, you know, I mean, you know what I'm talking about, man, more often than not fishing, that's the easy part. Like that's what we know how to do. That's what we were born to do. Like we know how to deal with people. We know how to deal with situations. We know how to hunt, right? And how to problem solve, you know, when we're out there, or at least for the most part. And if we don't, hopefully we figure it out by the end of the day, you know. But
exactly
with fishing kind of being the easy part, and I can equate this same with music, right? Shoot, same with raising a kiddo. You know, like the tough part is being prepared to make those decisions, being prepared to shift on a whim, being prepared to go at a moment's notice, you know, and everything is dialed, you know, from the damn fly box to the trailer hubs. I mean, like all of that, and like the licensings, the permits, the insurance, the this and the that, the bookings, you know, all that stuff. And not to mention, you know, like we're a three boat family, you know, and it has to be there. It has to be like that for where I guide and how I guide. And it's a little bit to juggle, especially when, you know, I guide right up to a day where I shut everything down, plug the boats and make sure that everything's good, have a day or two off, grab all the music gear, and I'm on a plane to go jump on a stage somewhere, you know. And I'm always thinking, okay, when I come home, like, you know, I've got this trip for this particular species when I get home this day, and like I have to have that stuff set up. Gear's got to be grab and go, you know. We don't break rods down, we don't it's got to be ready to go when right. I walk in that boat barn. And you know, if I right. and so if I schedule time to make that happen, the job runs a heck of a lot smoother, you know. But being independent, there's no, like, there's no security. Like I've said before, there's no security in it unless we go hunt it, unless we go get it, unless we make it, you know. And like I was saying, I mean, balancing with family and being, you know, the husband that we need to be, being the father that we need to be, and you know, still working hard, working tough, being responsible to hold everything together, both financially, emotionally, or and whatnot, and spiritually. Like it's a balancing act for sure. And that's probably the biggest struggle is making sure, you know, because at the end of the day, it's about the kids, you know. Like I've caught plenty of fish,
yep.
You know, I've had clients catch plenty of fish. I still love it. That never gets old, you know, but as my line of work and as the person that I feel like I need to be to my family, like it's not about me. It's not about my ego. It's not about me being anybody else other than a good dad that pulls his weight, you know?
You know, I know how much your son means to you. For me, I don't get any more pleasure. I can't get any more pleasure now watch my son start experiencing things that I've got to experience when I was a kid, or actually he's got to experience a whole lot more in the fishing world than I ever did at his age. You know, it's, and having the platform that I have, it's a special thing to be able to kind of show him stuff. And I know your son loves fishing, loves probably catching frogs and everything else too, right?
He's
and,
all in it. We're lucky to have a little pond at our house and have some bass and bluegill in it. And I'll tell you this, man, I took him fishing evening before last. I guided all day, came home, and he wanted to go and turned around and went back to the river. And I knew, I was like, man, we don't have, like, we're going to be able to fish for an hour and a half, you know? And we got out there, right now we got migratory striper in the system, you know, so took him out there and got him set up, and he's not doing much fly fishing yet at all. I mean, he is 9, you know, or almost.
So we got him
set up, you know, but the kiddo can throw a spin reel, can throw a bait caster, you know, I mean, like, and he pulls on these bass in the pond, and, you know, we got some good ones out there, you know, some of them pushing 8 pounds, you know, so he's learning quick. And anyhow, evening before last, we didn't have a whole lot of time. We hit a few spots, had a few bites. Well, he ended up getting a bite, and I mean, it was all him, you know. And he fought that fish, and it wasn't a big striper. It was just a little, you know, 6 pounder or whatever. But man, it was a hot fish. Took him for a ride, and he hung in there and was, and he never asked for help. And man, all I did was net his fish for him, and I about cried.
I was and smiling
just to see him handle it, you know, because he's caught, that kid's reeled in or stripped in more fish than most people four times his age, right? You know, he's stranger to fighting fish, you know, and for a while he didn't even want to fight them. He wanted to net them. Like, he would hook fish, and I guess he got that from me, because when he was a kid, I would hook a fish and I would say, here you go, bud, here you go. And then he would take the rod and I would grab the net. Well, for a while, he's back to fighting fish, but for a while, he would hook a fish and he'd go, Papa, here, take the rod. And I'm like, that's your fish. And he's like, I got to get the net, take the rod. And he wanted the net.
Tyler, he went through the same thing. Yeah. He just wanted to net him and him go and hold him. And then, you know, there for a while. Now he wants to cast and he wants to catch him. He wants to do it all on his own, which is awesome. I love seeing that.
It's a fun age, and man, it's so exciting. And, you know, but all the more important, all the more important that we are mindful to carve that time out, because the biggest downfall of being independent and having to book far ahead, to plan far ahead, to plan that security, is it's really easy for time just to fly by, because, you know, if we don't put it on the calendar, it just gets mowed over, you know, it gets booked, it gets taken over by something. And,
you know, Chuck, they say 90% of the time that you spend with your kid
is
before they're 18. And I can tell you, my son's 14, so I'm just a tad bit ahead of you with your son. And it gets harder, because all of a sudden they're in high school and they have sports and they have homework and they have projects and they have field trips. And then all of a sudden you're scheduling your life and their life. And that those windows get like more and more precious. I told Blaine, I guess it was last summer, one of our favorite things to do, me and my son, is to fish in a float tube, because he's not to where I'm just going to give him the keys to the boat. You know, I live on the Chesapeake. It's a little bit different. It's, you know, it's not a lake. I'll put it that way. And, so we love getting out in the float tubes and the tidal creeks and the tidal ponds and stuff like that. And I was telling Blaine, like, last year we were at a little area pond, and you know, it was morning, sun was up a little bit, and I was like looking at a bald eagle. I wasn't even fishing. And then I just turned over and I looked at him, and he was just casting perfect. And it's, you know, maybe like 100 feet away from me in the float tube, he was picking the spot to fish himself, and he just laid it out. And you get that feeling after you fish for a while and you're like, I'm going to catch a fish on this cast, and you just know it. And I was like, he's going to catch a fish on this cast. It was perfect. Like right where it needed to be, in like two strips, you know, he hooked a real nice pickerel, skyrocketed out of the water. It was a good fish, man. It was 24 inches fat, shot up in the air, shook its head. He had it on for like another 10 seconds and it threw the fly, and he just stripped the fly in, and he turned around and looked at me and he's like, that was a big fish. And he just kept going. And I was like, you know what I mean? I was like, well, that's about it. Like I've been, you know, cause you struggle and you want them to love it, but you don't want to push them too hard. You want them to do their own thing. And then you have like those moments where you're like, by God, he's been listening the past 7 years. You know what I mean? Like, you just put it all together, man. And you're like, wow. That was.
Yeah.
And you've got to be present a lot.
Yeah.
To get to that. And like, you'll see that in the next couple of years when they get strong enough, you know, they kind of go through puberty and they're like a young man instead of a little kid. And, you know, they're it's weird. Like your relationship changes over time. And, you know, you're not as much like you're still a dad and they still need direction, but you're also kind of like, you know, a fishing buddy when you're out there. Right. It's weird. It's weird. That's what I'm going through right now.
When Grady turned 6 years old, I'd been wanting to get him like, 'cause he's got a canoe, you know, we got this little pond, it's a little over an acre. It's a good size pond, but, and you know, probably 12 feet deep, and we got it loaded with bass and bluegill, and we would get out there in the canoe or whatever, and I want to either build him or like get him a little boat. And it had been on my mind for a while, and my buddy Maury Hatch, I was just thinking about it, and a couple weeks after that, my buddy Maury Hatch sent out a message and said, "Hey, I got a friend who's selling a old steelhead pram, right? That he's done with if anybody wants it, you know." And I had him send me the number, and I bought it for Grady for his 6-year-old birthday present. And it's a little 8-foot pram with oars, you know, one bench and one seat in the middle, and has a little trolling motor on it, you know. And the only rule was, as long as he put that life jacket on right, he could go do whatever he wanted, you know. And he got into it, and it was the coolest thing, you know, day one, seeing that kiddo ripping around the pond by himself with the trolling motor. And then for a while, it kind of sat there. You know, and I would say, and we would use it every once in a while, and the two of us would run out there. Well, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 months ago, I see him kind of rummaging around the boat barn, and he was grabbing a rod and like pulled his tackle box out. And I'm like, and I was busier than all trying to do stuff around the house. And I went over, I'm like, what you doing, buddy? And he's like, I'm going fishing. And I'm like, oh, cool. Well, let me grab my rod. And he was like, well, you see, Papa, sometimes you just need to be by yourself. So I was thinking about just going by myself, if that's all right. And I was like, hey, I get it, man, you go. And I helped him get a few things together, man. And he, you know, loaded his boat and pushed it off and backed it up. And I would see him run from one side of the pond to the other, make a couple casts, saw him catch a fish, you know, run back to the other side, make a couple casts. And, oh man, you want to see a grown man cry, come hang out in my house a little bit when he's doing that stuff. But
that's great, man. That's what you want to see. Those are memories, man. I want to kind of, there's a couple things I want to cover tonight, mostly fishing, but I do want to cover a little bit about your music background. And I kind of, you know, for me being a tinkerer and playing around with different flies, and, you know, I know you enjoy tying and designing as well. I want to kind of hear your thought process on the music and songwriting and where you get your inspiration from that. And that's one. The other side of one of these questions I want to ask is, how in the world can you go from the peace and serenity of being on the water to getting up in front of thousands of people on stage and all that? I mean, to me, that is just, that's what I admire, because that's like the last thing I would ever want to do, because I'm more of an introvert. And for me to have to go do public speaking events, and Tony could attest to this, I'm just like, it's not in my wheelhouse. Right. So I admire that, you know, because you're able to do that kind of thing. And you've made an amazing career out of it. So I just want to, it's just so counterintuitive to what I do. And, you know, mine is like serenity, being on the river, and you do that too. But then you're thrust into the spotlight, literally, and thousands of people around you are playing your music. And that's just, it's really amazing. And I mean, it's got to get you amped. I mean, for me, I'd be wanting to run.
Yeah. You know, there's definitely a lot of adrenaline and you get back to the hotel from a show, you know, the way we play them. And, sometimes there's not a whole lot of sleep. You know, you're so jacked up with adrenaline and you're fired up that, man, I mean, I can't, you know, wheels are turning and, but I love it. But it is, it's two completely alternate lifestyles. You know, at home, I'm a 3:30, 4 a.m. guy. That's like, I have, you know, depending on the season, but for the most part, like it's somewhere around 4 a.m. You know, I have a little time where I feed my dog, let my dog out, you know, have a little moment of, you know, not looking at any screens or not looking at anything artificial, just a moment of like collecting myself, looking at the day, focusing on what I need to handle. And usually those early morning thoughts, whatever pops into your head, is usually the most important things you need to take care of, you know, that day. That's the clearest I am, you know, that first moments. And, you know, and I get after it and go do our thing. When I get home, you know, usually it's a little after the boy gets home from school. And then there's not a whole lot of time to clean up the boat or reset rods or do anything like that. It's just straight to hanging out with him and dad duty, you know. And if I don't fall asleep on the floor playing with him, you know, I get up after he goes to bed and then I get out to the boat barn and make sure everything's good for the next day. You know, because I mean, way we do it is someday, you know, today I was on the Bass Lakes. The day before that was striper. The day before that we were drifting for trout, you know. So we come home and you bounce between, you know, a drift boat or two different jet boats, depending on which fishery we're doing. And you know, there's a lot. And then when I go on the road, man, that changes drastically. You know, we're up sometimes getting loading out of the venue at 2 a.m. you know, we're going on stage at like 11 p.m like way past my bedtime, you know.
Yeah,
it's hard.
Yeah,
it's weird, but I've done it for so long, I'm kind of used to. There's little tricks that I do, you know, right before a trip. I'll intentionally stay up all night, a couple nights, you know, and I know it's probably not healthy for us, you know, but I have to, especially when we're going overseas, but I just have to switch that clock in my brain and my body. And, you know, so if we're traveling over there, I'll stay up all night, you know, a couple nights before. And then by the time I fly over there, I actually sleep a little on the plane, and then we get up and I'm halfway, not, you know, not too jet lagged and halfway normal, but, you know, yeah. But yeah, as far as you were asking about inspiration for songwriting and whatnot, man, it comes from everywhere. You know, I mean, I kind of found music and, you know, expression, I would say, at an early age, and feel pretty lucky, damn lucky, that I found people who looked at music as a tool, as more of a way for us to understand ourselves better, understand our battles, use music as a form of therapy, use music more as like a vehicle to overcome obstacles and to better ourselves, which is awesome, because it could have gone the other way where it was about, you know, girls and drugs and you know, fast living, and it was just a completely different group of people and mindset when it came to playing music. And in doing that, we did it in a way where it was almost like releasing a fight, releasing these demons in you that you needed to get off your chest to take a step forward, you know. And in doing that, writing songs like that became very much like a self-healing process, you know? So never was I thinking, oh, I wonder if this is going to sound good, or I wonder if people are going to like this, or I wonder if I can make a song that sounds like this or sounds like that. It was about what had to come out. And pretty soon it got to be a point and a moment where I had to do it. And I had to do it genuinely. I had to do it honestly. I had to be honest with myself. I had to look at myself in ways where sometimes it wasn't all that pleasant, you know? I had to face those things, face those battles head on, and overcome them through expressing it through music, through movement, through words, you know? And, you know, so as far as the inspiration as to where that comes from, to me, it was, if anything moved me, whether it be a positive way or a extremely negative way, if it moved me, stirred me up, it was probably something that I needed to deal with or worth sharing or worth getting off my chest, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So, Chuck, listening to you, Chuck, I'm kind of just taking your words in and seeing how your mind ticks. And, you know, you said some pretty thoughtful things, and it just kind of struck me, because I have the artistic ability of an ant. I cannot do what you do. I think people would pay me not to sing. Maybe that's a career that I'm missing. But just listening to how you're describing these situations, I think there's a lot of similarities between fishing and music. Maybe some differences, but I think there's
really
a lot of similarities.
Is, man.
For you,
huh? It really is, you know. I mean, you guys know just as well as I do, fishing ain't all about the fish, you know. It's not. It's the journeys. It's the people that we come across, the people that we meet along the way. It's those just mind-numbing headache moments where we just cannot seem to tap the source. We can't seem to put our finger on what the heck they're doing at that moment. You know, you're looking at it, you're going, man, I mean, it should be like clockwork right now. What shifted? And then that sends us into some problem solving. You know, that sends us into like, okay, you know, maybe overthinking this, let's simplify this and let's get back to, you know, finding the food. You know, what are they eating right now? Let's go find the food, and then we'll find our fish that we're looking for, you know. And in so many ways, like, you know, music is a lot of the same deal to me. It's problem solving. It's finding the path, you know. It's discovering the song more so than, you know, writing a song. Like, I don't believe I write these. I don't believe I create these songs. I believe all this stuff, all these songs, all these messages, they all exist. You know, it's the same stories that people have been telling for thousands of years, right? It's love, it's conflict, it's yeah, battles, it's all the same stuff, right? So to me, and all the words exist. We didn't create the words, they already exist. So what's our duty? What's our job? It's to find the path. It's to find how all these pieces of the puzzle fit together, you know?
I think part of it too, I know for me, is it's fishing provides me occasionally, you know, if it happened every time you went out,
absolutely,
it wouldn't mean as much, but it provides you with these brief moments,
yes,
of perfection where you're like, you're just one,
yeah,
with nature Yeah, you feel like you feel like a pebble of sand on a beach, right? Like you're part of it all, and everything just works. And you're like, all right, I'm in the moment, right? Like this is it's not gonna last forever. Let me soak this in. So, Blaine, what were you gonna? You know what I'm talking about, of course.
Yeah, I mean it's that peace. You know, it's kind of where you find yourself. You know. I know that's where it is with me. I mean, I can't say about any other place, but I do feel peace and comfort when I'm on the water. I mean, it's my where I should be. It's where I'm supposed to be.
And Chuck, I'm sure that you've been on stage doing your thing and you've had those moments of just perfection. You know, you practice long enough, you do everything, and you probably look out at that crowd and everyone's hollering and having a good time, and you're just and you hear all, you know, everyone in the band's doing their part, and you're like,
sheer glory. Man, I remember when I was living in Micanopy, Florida, was taken in by a family out there, lived above the wood shop of Kip Street, a street family. And I learned a ton from Kipper. You know, one of our, Micanopy is kind of right in the middle, north central of Florida. And you got either coast in either direction. We got fresh water all around us. The Suwannee River wasn't far. I mean, it was.
That's where all the clear water springs and stuff are, right? Pretty close. Yeah,
a lot of springs, you know, a lot of just absolutely breathtaking fisheries. And I learned a lot from Kip. You know, he really showed me the ropes out there fishing around on the Gulf Coast, around Cedar Key, all, you know, from the mouth of Suwannee and, you know, a zone that called Shell Mound, you know, that was kind of our stomping grounds. And I spent a lot of time out there, and I did a lot of you know, just solo runs out there, and definitely stuck in the mud, you know, for hours, didn't make it back in time, and you know, learn some things the hard way for sure. And I'll never forget, though, kind of early on and kind of learning the cuts, getting out there on a low tide and really kind of figuring out the cuts of this whole inshore paradise over there. And, you know, I had my spots and I had, you know, some spots Kip showed me. I had a bunch of stuff. And one day I just came upon this one spot that I'd never noticed before until I saw it on a low tide. And I was going, man, that would be sweet. If water was moving over that bar right there, there was a little cut and it was coming in, and I could tell with the big mound right there that there would be a nice eddy there. It'd probably be a good ambush zone for fish. And a few days later, I was just watching the tide, and I'd been fishing a lot. So like, man, I really wasn't, I didn't look at the tide that much. I was just looking at my watch and like, well, it was high, you know, at this time. And so this day it's going to be about 30 to 40 minutes later here. And I was just probably at one point in my life, probably the most in tune with Mother Nature that I had felt I was, you know, like just in tune with the tide. And like, there was a day where there was this spot I had a hunch on, and put the boat in, went out by myself and went out to this spot, and the water was moving over it just like I thought it would, and just hammered the redfish on it. You know, went out, caught my bait, caught some mud minnows, caught some mullet, you know, to fish some cut mullet, and just hammered it. And I was sitting there, and I just had this moment of like, there's nobody around, there's no one. And it hit me that I was the only person on the planet that knew what was going on right then and there. Because I was paying attention, and I went on a hunch, and I was paying attention to Mama Nature and it panned out. And like you're saying, like that feeling, that glory, you know, of like, and it doesn't have to be anybody around. Nobody has to know about it. Nobody, you know, it's you and the natural world. And man, I mean, I'm getting like my hair standing up just thinking of it. And like, that's like in music, that's the same thing that I strive for in songwriting. It's like discovering that path, like we were talking about, like realizing it than having some belief that you're creating something. It's more recognizing what's already there, what's already in you, and how to express it. You know, in fishing, the tide's already there. You know, the oyster bars are there. Like the fish are already there, right? What's the path on how to make contact, you know? And in songwriting and in writing music or discovering music, you know, in so many ways, what I'm looking for is that hair standing up on the back of my neck, you know, and that moment where I may be struggling to fit those words together or find out what it is, you know. And sometimes in writing, or often in like figuring songs out, I'll sit down and play a thing and just record it. And sometimes I sing gibberish. I sing a melody. I don't know where that comes from. It's what is coming out, you know? And sometimes, and there's no words there, it's gibberish, but the melody's there, the energy, the feeling is there. And I'll record that and I'll listen back to it and kind of see where it feels right. And every once in a while, a phrase will pop up or some little clue or something will come out where it hits me. I'm like, that's what this is about. That's what I got it. That's what I need to talk about right now, you know? And I don't care if anybody likes it or, you know, gravitates to it. If they do, that's wonderful. That's a blessing, but that can't be why we're doing it, you know? You know, but I put those pieces of the puzzle and every once in a while you lock that last piece in and you go, oh, that's it. That's it. And that hair stands up on your arms and the back of your neck. And like, and again, I'm not saying it's good, you know, I'm just saying we just figured it out. We just tapped into what was already there and we just solved the riddle. We solved the puzzle. And that's what I look for.
Me too, as a designer and guide. I mean, those moments when you figure out a fish or you figure out a fishery or whatever it might be. I mean, for me, that's what's always made it tick for me 100%. So obviously going back to, I mean, it's obviously passionate about what you do. I'd really like to know how you found fishing. I mean,
some of my earliest memories. I mean, you know, I come from, you know, my dad's a Daytona boy. My grandparents on his side lived right on the intercoastal in Daytona, had a dock. And I mean, you know, grandmama used to, you know, bring us shrimp, you know, and we used to catch redfish and striper off the dock in Daytona. And catfish, whatever was in the intercoastal there. And so we had those early memories. On my mama's side of the family, all Cajun folks, and my mama and papa, you know, were just cut from that old cloth. They just grew their own food, fished, hunted. Like, I don't even know if they knew the word sport, you know what I mean? It was what
way of life
we did, you know. Like, it wasn't, I never even thought of it as any kind of, sure, we fish for fun, you know, when the family was all together, but it was never even a thought that this was like a recreational thing. It's just what the family did, you know, but my entire family, everyone did. My mama, my papa, like, you know, my grandmother didn't fish that much, but my granddad always did. But you know, my mom, my dad, you know, I always said if my dad wasn't a pro golfer, I bet he would have been a pro bass angler. Like, he was sick with it and yeah. just was in love with bass fishing. And you know, but my mama, just being the old wild Cajun gal she is, you know, she was always getting after it, you know. Mama taught us to how to clean fish, you know. I mean, like, this was just part of what we did, and a huge part at that. But
I know that resonates with Tony, with his mom. But something interesting, you talked a little bit about your dad. I mean, he was a PGA player. I think he finished like second to Jack Nicklaus in the PGA championship, right?
He was something like that,
I believe. But it was a Ryder Cup.
He was a Ryder Cup team player. Yeah, 63. And I mean, he was one of the big dogs for sure, you know. And you know, all late 50s, all through the 60s, he had a really impressive run on the PGA Tour. And then
he became a golf coach at a couple schools, right?
Yeah, for a while when he got off the tour and he married my mom, he found Christ and started touring with my mama. She's a ventriloquist who travels in evangelism. So it's a wild family. And there's not like, and that's probably where my brother and I get a lot of our kind of independence and independent outlook, on how we live and work. It's everybody in our family were, you know, rice farmers, you know, housemaids, pro golfer, ventriloquist, you know, there's actors, another pro golfer, a preacher, you know, that like not really traditional occupations, you know what I mean? Everybody, yeah. It's beautiful, that's great, you know, man. But it definitely taught us, you know, like, hey, it's okay to carve your own way, you know?
That's what life's all about to me. I mean, that's all I've known. My dad was the same. My grandfather was the same.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of, my dad thought I was crazy to try to be a professional fly angler. It's like, you're out of your mind. Yeah. Like, well, it's like, I'm young enough. If I fail, I can go back to school, I guess, you know? So, but I took that leap of faith. Here I am still trying to figure out what I'm going to do tomorrow.
Man, I was grinding in the music stuff for goodness, like 15 years before my parents were like, is this your job? I'm like, well, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it is. Making it. Yep. So, well, we got to cover a little bit just because, you know, ASGA is all about conservation and fish and trying to protect the fish that we target. And we don't talk a lot about the West Coast that I know of on here. Maybe some that I haven't listened to, but you know, I know it's, we're trying to save Eastern striped bass. Since your main target is migratory striped bass on the West Coast, let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say my main target would be the residents. You know, we have a little window with where the migratory, you know, come in. That's right now. We got them in the system right now. And yeah, you know, for some people who don't know, you know, striper were introduced into California 140. I don't know exactly. I'd have to look, but it was 140 some odd years ago. Brought over in an aquarium cart, right? And as far as I heard, the first initial introduction was only like 120 something fish in one of the bays out here that had a lot of characteristics of your neck of the woods, Tony, and which was part of why, you know, it was such a valued food source and just a valued fish. You know, a lot of people over here thought, oh, why couldn't it work here? You know, and, you know, they coexisted with the anadromous fish and the indigenous fish over here for that long. They're still here. There was a rearing program that was around in the early 90s. And, you know, I'm probably not the guy to be talking about all this stuff to give you, you know, I'd love for you to one day talk to James Stone over here, who is, you know, James Stone, Hogan Brown, of course, or Paul Young, you know, those few guys like know a ridiculous amount about our striper over here. But yeah, I mean, we have what mm-hmm. I do know, what I understand is for many, many, many years, these striper were very similar to how you have it over there where, you know, you had these migratory fish that would come in for a little spell and run back out. And over time, as I understand, you know, through studies, through shocking surveys and whatnot, we can look at a graph and we can look at it by the year, you know, like say in the early 90s compared to, you know, recent years. And the concentration of fish that come in the migratory run are slowly moving further and further and further up the river system, you know. And, you know, I've talked to old timers who, you know, I mean, I fish striper year round. As long as the river's not blown out completely or it's unsafe to go, I'll fish for them in clean water and murky water. I'll hit them any which way I can, you know, and I still get, you know, old timers that have fished, you know, their entire life in California, and they see me at the gas station running to go fish in, you know, July, and they say striper, and they're like, what striper? You're still getting striper, you know? And, there's a lot of people that don't realize like over the years, you know, these fish would come up and, you know, there would be some fish that would stay back. You know, the rearing program introduced a vast amount of fish into the river systems as well, and that helped the population quite a bit, right? But what we have is a very, very healthy population of resident striper, and that is probably my, you know, I mean, I row a drift boat for trout and steelhead. That's pretty much my backyard. We got a ton of foothill reservoirs around here that have all the bat, you know, smallmouth, largemouth, and we have spotted bass that were introduced in the early 70s. We have the hybrids. We call them mean mouths out here, but that cross between a spotty and a smallie. You know, American shad as well, you know, that run up, in around this time of year. But, you know, my main focus and what I go to bed sometimes thinking about and wake up thinking about are chasing those big females. There's nothing like it. And,
I've seen some of those ones you've been sending me pictures of. That's pretty impressive.
They're very special fish, man. They'll humble anyone, you know, and, you know, you get a 40 pounder hitting the current and all, like a lot of these systems that we're fishing in are what we call real river, you know, where there's, you know, there's big eddies, there's drop-offs, there's braids, you know, there's current and sometimes heavy, heavy current. And so, and they're all just riddled with tree snags of all sorts. You know, we got a lot of nut groves and fruit grow and a lot of agriculture, you know, all in Northern California. So a lot of these rivers, you know, are pretty, pretty snaggy, you know, so it makes it sporty, you know, but when it together, my goodness, man, there's nothing like it.
What's the, there's something, what you guys have out there now that you, I mean, you've kind of, I know you and Hogan have been pushing the bass out there. It's like, is it Cal Bass Union?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Bass Union. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that was
tell me a little bit about that. I started, you know, we were out fishing both striper and as well as these spotted bass with some other great guides out here. Ryan Williams is one. There's a ton of them. And but what we noticed is we were having a tough time selling bass trips. You know, we got a lot of trout bums. We're in Northern California. You know, we got the Truckee. We got, you know, Pyramid Lake is not far over the border. We got, you know, the Yuba River, the American River. You know, there's a lot of people that love the Sacramento, of course, up by Redding, which is an absolute trout factory up there. You know, we got a lot of people who are very passionate about trout. And, you know, our thing was, you know, as guides, it wasn't good enough for us to only be a walk and wade guy or only be a drift boat guide, because when these rivers go, you know, it's not totally uncommon for some of these rivers to be unfishable for 3 months, you know, and that really? Just,
wow.
That doesn't work if you're trying to make a doing this. And not to mention, we have all these other fisheries that when the wintertime comes or the springtime comes and some of these rivers blow up, like we have these wonderful days, you know, out on the foothill lakes chasing these spotted bass, you know. The two guys I had in the boat today had never done it before. One guy was a definite trout guy. He hadn't fly fished for bass much at all. Neither of them had, you know, been on this fishery. And I mean, they just had a bang up day, you know, just big number day, had a blast, had some healthy fish. And that's the perfect example. Those guys have lived here their entire life, had never been on that fishery, had never fished this particular method or had caught this particular species, you know, and that's why we started the Cal Bass Union, right? Same reason, you know, Hogan invited me in to guide on the SAC with him. And, you know, I had caught striper before. I'd caught him in Florida. I'd caught him in South Carolina. I'd caught them in California and places, but I'd never really done it out of jet boats in the current, drifting the way that we do, casting where we, you know, targeting them the way that we target them. And especially in the time throughout the different, you know, months of year that we do it. And, you know, so the Cal Bass Union was simply just to, you know, educate people and some cool stuff that we do, you know, give them another fishery to care about, but also to spread these anglers out throughout California, you know. Like, it's not healthy in October when you got a ton of people on the same stretch of river, half of them walking through reds, don't know what they're doing, you know, just walking right through salmon reds. And, you know, in the meantime, like, we have all these other fisheries that are just empty and loaded with fish, you know, empty with boats, loaded with fish, you know, so.
Sounds like paradise. I did that exact same thing back in the 90s here, where You know, we had trout, you know, and back then that was the main thing, still is today, with trout still kind of rules the fly fishing world, but even more back then. And I lived in this smallmouth mecca and muskie and all that. And I was kind of early on, I mean, you know, having mentors like Lefty, and hadn't got to really know Lefty yet, but they were mentoring me whether they knew it or not. You know what I mean? Back then, you know, reading their articles and reading stories about them, and, you know, seeing Lefty and Clouser, and seeing Clouser guiding up on the Susquehanna. Right. It's like, I can do that here. You know, in my little neck of the woods, we had unbelievable fishing, and it was a struggle. It was such a struggle for me to try to get people to go musky fishing 20 some years ago. I mean, I had to basically get some of my good clients. It's like, look, I'm going to take you to do this. It's going to be a battle, but these fish are untouched. And if you don't like it, and if we don't get a fish, then you don't have to pay for the day. I mean, that's how I had to convince people to do it. And finally they did it, and they were like, this is great. I mean, and then they would tell people, and that's kind of how I built up my muskie fishing. But the smallmouth thing was like, that's just a bass. I don't want to do that. I want to go trout. It's like, trust me, this topwater thing, you'll never want to go trout fishing again. I promise you. Yeah. And that's how I would sell it. And sure enough, you take them out, they start catching these really nice 15 to 20 inch smallmouth on topwater popping bugs. And they just like, why? Why haven't I done this before? You know, it's amazing how resistant to change people are.
I put it to those guys, you know, they had their choice, you know, these guys last night. And like, I've been bouncing around these fisheries a bunch, like I was saying, and, you know, kind of have a finger on the pulse. And I was like, so listen, you know, we can go drift if you want. I'd imagine, like, on a good day right now, like, you guys are going to have about a dozen shots. If unless we see some heads, like, you know, that's about it. Or we can run out on the bass lake and you're going to have a lot more, you know, and we're not going to see anybody, you know. And they chose that. And, you know, and once we get them out there, they fall in love with it. You know, they're fishing around waterfalls and, you know, having these crazy number days. And every once in a while you get a toad or two, you know, it's hard to beat. It's really hard to beat. I'll never forget fishing with Ryan Williams, the Yuba River. And I remember this distinctly because I took a photo. But in 2017, we had a massive winter, and I ran up the river to this ridge, and I took a photo of the river and looked at the flows right then. And the river was flowing like 87,000, like almost 88,000. And it ended up going higher after I took that photo. And it was just shot. It was going to be shot for a couple months. You know, it was just gone. Every once in a while, what does it for us out here is the combination of getting a super heavy snowstorm up in the hill, up in Tahoe, right? Getting a massive snowstorm immediately followed by a high elevation, warm rainstorm, right? It's just a triple whammy where, you know, you have like the warmth of the storm, heavy rain and I'm talking like a week long rainstorm, you know, and all that new snow, you know, like big snows, you know, where, hey, oh man, it just snowed 9 feet in 3 days. Like, that happens here. That happens. And then you do that and everything blows out. But there are some fisheries that, you know, there's not a ton of muck, you know, coming into them, a certain flow, you know, they'll hold. And I'll never forget a time where I took that photo, and a couple days later, Ryan Williams and I went out on the lake, and there was not another boat in sight, and we just clobbered them. And the water was like 42 degrees, you know, and we were just hammering on them. And we're looking around like going, what is wrong with people? What do we got to do? like, what do we have to do to like get people to come out here and check this out?
Offer free trips if they don't like it, right? Right. That's what I had to do. That's like,
yeah,
pretty much.
But
what, been on here for a little bit. I don't want to keep you all night. You got tomorrow.
I'm headed over to Lake Oroville. We have a bass tournament this weekend. That's a fundraiser for Cast Hope. Happy to actually mention that. That's an organization that I work with. If people want to find out more about it, website's casthope.org. And, man, it's a wonderful organization that is built by fly fishermen. Ryan Johnson kind of birthed this whole idea some years back, and it was built to expose our youth to the outdoors, right? It happens, fly fishing is more or less just the vehicle, right? Because this thing was started right. by fly fishermen, naturally, it's, you know, guides taking a kid and their mentor out on a free fly fishing trip and eliminating the cost burden of, because as we know, it ain't all that cheap, you know, to get places, to get gear, and there is a massive learning curve, especially when you're talking about kids anywhere from 10 years old on up, you know, that some of them have never held a rod. Some of them have never been in a boat much or, you know, been in the outdoors and in the places that guys like us at times might take for granted from time to time because we're there all the time and we do this so much, you know, so that's what it's for. We work with a lot of different groups of all sorts, from, you know, boys and girls clubs to foster homes, schools, churches, individuals. It's not necessarily a program for, you know, kids from, you know, rough areas or broken homes, although some of them have come from those situations. It's more about catering to kids who, whether their parents could help it or not, just where there's a lack of attention in turning them on to the outdoors, exposing them to the reasons that we care about this so much, you know, like all three of us here at some point in our life, somebody lit a spark at an early age, right? They showed us something, blew our mind.
Yep.
And from there, we became passionate about it. And then we would slowly pick up little bits and pieces of knowledge and fast forward, you know, 30, 40 years down the line. And all of a sudden, like, we care about it. And now we have kids that we're trying to pass this on to and, you know, continue the reasons, you know, that it's important to protect our waterways and to protect these species and to fight for them. You know, because as you guys know, for the most part, to most people in the outside, the other outdoor world, which is out of our circle in the realm of angling or hiking or, you know, whatever, being in the outdoors. I'm talking about city folk, fellas. for a lot of those people, so much of this is out of sight, out of mind. They have no idea. They don't know where their water's coming from. You know, they don't know what negative impacts have to happen for them to turn on a faucet, you know? And,
right.
You know, so to us, it's about lighting that spark in the youth. And if some of them gravitate to it, and the ones that gravitate to it, we then try to nurture that child and that mentor, strengthen the bond together. You know, sometimes it's a parent and a kid, or a big brother and a kid, a guidance counselor and a kid, or, you know, who knows, you know, sibling, you know, however it works. But it's a beautiful organization. It does a lot of good. But we have a fundraiser tournament this weekend. There's a handful of guys, all the participants, you know, each guide has two anglers. All the participants, you know, ante up, throw some money in for the getting into the tournament. And yeah, it's a 2-day tournament. Anyhow, that you asked, that's what I'm doing this weekend. So tomorrow's the meetup.
That's great.
And tournament Saturday, Sunday.
Oh, that's so important. And good on you and Hogan. Yeah. I think he's a part of that too, right? And all you guys for doing that. It's we need it. We need as many kids to get involved in fishing. Absolutely. And it changes their lives, man. It just gives them a different perspective.
Hogan turned me on to Cast Hope. He was the one, you know, he kind of encouraged me to, at one point, you know, before I was officially guiding, you know, licensed and insured and actually doing it as a business. Like, I've been taking people fishing for years, taking friends, use my gear, and I bring them to the spot and show them this and that. And, you know, that's been happening for a long time. But Hogan, I was talking to him and I was looking at just how he modeled his life. He was a school teacher, he was a dad, and he was a full-time fishing guide. He was doing the dance, man. He was doing the balancing act and excelling at all those things through balance, right? And I was like, man, I don't know. My wife and I were talking about having kids in the future. It's like, man, I can't be on the road 24/7 anymore. What's plan B? You know, and I thought about going back into carpentry work. I thought about producing records. I thought about all kinds of stuff. And it was Hogan who was like, why don't you guide? Like, you come home from tour and you're straight into the boat. You're out there more than half the guides anyway, you know, like, you already know your zone. You have the gear, like, and he kind of pointed me, he goes, you know, you should check out Cast Hope, start guiding for Cast Hope. And I looked into the organization, fell in love with it. And he told me back, it was like, nothing will tune you up than taking a couple 11-year-olds who could absolutely care less about any of this and have never touched a fly rod in their life. You know, that'll tune you up real quick, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, that's good, man. I'm going to get Hogan on here at some point, but man, I really appreciate you, man. It's you're such an amazing human. And, I love watching all the things that you're doing, you know, the ambassadors for a lot of companies like that I'm also with, but you're also with like to mention some of those, like Hatch, which is a big help with ASGA
still with Traeger. I do a little bit of stuff with Traeger, but, mostly Hatch, you know, I have a ton of respect for the Ashcraft family and, they're so sweet and man, they're wonderful and they believe in what they're doing, make a just absolutely incredible reel, you know, that has gotten me out of a lot of sticky situations on the water, you know, Hatch, with, Grundens, super solid, company and, Loon Outdoors, you know, Oscar Blues, Bare Bones, Living Decked. I feel really, really lucky. And I will say this, man, about working with companies like that. You know, it ain't about the money. It ain't about free stuff. It's not about any of that. To me, like, the most important thing is the people being able to phone and say, hey, gang, like, you know, and there's communication there. There's reciprocation there, you know, where, you know, And I feel really lucky to you know, be linked up with companies that I believe in and that make gear that I actually use and abuse, you know, and you know, I just feel lucky to be a piece of the puzzle, man. Yeah,
I feel the same way. Feel like be a part of the family. I'm using gear that I used before I was even with them, you know, and to be able to have that.
Yeah,
it's hard to beat.
Without.
So, well, man, I can't thank you enough for being on here. I don't want to keep you all night. I know you got stuff to do, and it's always a pleasure, one, to get to talk to you, get to see you. I can't wait till next time, but hopefully I'm going to be out there in June around you. I might have to figure out if you're going to be around. Maybe I can swing down for a couple days and fish with you or something.
I don't care where it is, Lou. We just need to go get in another boat.